So joining us now is Sergey Netessin. He is professor. He is the Timken Professor of Global Technology and Innovation at INSEAD. He's the author of the book, The Risk-Driven Business Model, Four Questions That Will Define Your Company, and also co-author of the recent report, How Do the World's Biggest Companies Deal with the Startup Revolution? Sergey, welcome to Innovation Navigation.
Thank you for having me, David.
So, why should large companies engage with startups? What do large companies have to gain?
Well, there are so many reasons. I don't know where to start. So, as a person who has been working on innovation for many, many years, I've been living kind of in two worlds. One world is large corporations, which have money, have resources, have customers, have desire to innovate, but very rarely have the energy to do that and flexibility to do that, who are kind of caught up in their existing business model and find it very, very hard to change. On the other hand, I've been working with startups, which are very agile, very innovative, very inventive. They have no problem starting something new, but they have no money, no customers, no resources, and very little precious time. And really what I observed is that those two worlds rarely talk to each other. They go to different conferences. They hire very different types of people. They speak different language. They move at a different speed. What I found interesting is that I have to talk to both of them, and there is innovation going in one world, innovation going in the other world. And increasingly, what I came to understand is that big companies very often find it very hard to innovate internally, and it's much easier for them to engage with a startup that can do this innovation externally.
And I think that if I had to characterize, oversimplify the attitude of the two sides, on the large company side, it's kind of, we want your new technology product, whatever, we'll just buy it or we'll source it, and we really don't need anything else from you. And the startups are thinking, you're a slow dinosaur, just give us your money and go away. What does each side miss from that attitude? What does the large company miss by only looking at startups as sources of new technology or products or services?
So what they miss probably is that you can certainly take this startup's technology, product or service or whatever that is, and you can acquire it, for example, but then you will have tremendous problem integrating it within a big corporation. And so there are numerous examples when, you know, this kind of acquisitions basically kill a startup, because once you acquire as a big corporation, once you acquire a startup, you will have difficulty attracting good people to that startup because it's not a startup anymore. And you will have a tremendous difficulty trying to integrate startup into your existing business model and keep the startup alive, keeping startup innovative. And so that is a very rarely a good approach.
And to some degree, you know, innovation processes in big companies have to be different than innovation processes in small companies. And just knowing some friends that were startup people that got acquired, they found themselves very frustrated by the bureaucracy in big companies. And that's not entirely bad, but it sounds like you're saying that the big companies could learn something from those smaller companies about how to do innovation faster, better, cheaper.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, at the very basic level, if you could keep relevant startups close, you know, if you could open an incubator or, you know, some co-working space for a startup, which actually costs almost nothing. This is a very trivial amount of money, right? So when we think about cooperation between large corporations and startups, very often we think about starting a corporate venture capital firm. Yeah, you need tens, maybe $100 million for something like that. It's relatively expensive. But, you know, co-working space, running an incubator, accelerator, that's a pretty trivial amount of money. But this will give you a unique insight into what is going on in a startup world. Say, you know, last week I gave a keynote speech at an insurance conference, right? And insurance companies, they've existed for hundreds of years. Their business model is old. They have no idea what's going on in the startup world. At least most of them don't. around. And for them, it was a huge revolution to learn about all the different, you know, companies and insurance tech, which are doing big data and, you know, insurance telematics and this and that. So just having a an overview of what is happening is so much better than being completely clueless about what is coming.
And one of the things I liked about your report, one of the many things, is that, you know, too often, at least the companies I'm familiar with, they only had kind of a hammer and a screwdriver in the tool belt. The hammer being, let's buy the company, and the screwdriver being, let's buy the technology. Whereas you list a whole lot of other ways. So what are some of the less common but effective ways that large companies can engage with startups?
So we created in this report what we call a Swiss Army knife of engagement, corporate startup engagement. And you can start with simple things like events. You know, you start a conference, you start, you know, startup competition or hackathon, or, you know, sponsor some kind of existing event, right? So that's the simplest, most trivial, the cheapest probably thing to do that would get you insight into what is going on in a startup world, which is relevant to a large corporation. Then you can go beyond that. You can think about starting support services, you know, provide startups with legal, accounting, you know, consulting, technical services. Say you are a, you know, big consulting company, certainly you are not affordable to startups, but if you're a little bit inventive, you can say, hey, we'll do it for free for you, kind of, but, you know, for a small share of equity, for example. Then you can start startup programs, you know, offer free products, offer bundles of support services. Microsoft is very, very good at that. They give, you know, software basically for free to startups. They give you cloud support services in the hope that you'll grow and at some point you start paying. Then you can do co-working spaces and graduate into accelerators and incubators where you bundle support services, maybe small investment with a co-working space. Then you can start thinking about bigger things, which actually cost quite a bit of money. You know, you can think about investments. You can think about merger and acquisitions, you know, starting a venture capital fund, participating as a limited partner in a big fund. So all of those things are possible.
We're talking with Sergey Natesin. He's the author of co-author of a recent report, How Do the World's Biggest Companies Deal with the Startup Revolution? And if you're trying to engage with startups, or you're in a startup trying to engage with a larger company, give us a call and get Sergey's advice. We're at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. What's fun about this report is just the range of different things, different arrangements that startups have entered into with big companies. This Amazon Web Services pop-up lofts, I thought was interesting. It almost sounded like a coffee shop where your barista is an Amazon Web Service architect, you know, and you can go in, get a cup of coffee and advice about how to structure your cloud-based service to use Amazon Web Services capabilities.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, what we've done in this report, and, you know, this report co-authored with...
Do they have food along with the coffee?
I believe so. You know, it varies. It varies. I think coffee is the most important part.
Probably, yeah.
But we've done this report with 500 startups, which is a Silicon Valley venture capital firm, one of the most active in the world. And what we've done, we looked at 500 Fortune global companies, and we looked at every single thing that they do with startups. And we were somewhat surprised to find that they do quite a bit. There are all kinds of interesting arrangements. And we learned things that I've never known about. Like, for example, did you know that CIA has a venture capital arm? You know, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seemed like a cool venture capital
firm. What were some of the strangest but effective ways you've seen that a large company has used to engage with a startup?
One thing that I will mention. So, for example, if you look at the country level, we expected United States to be by far the most engaged with startups. What we found is that it's not actually France France is the one that is most engaged. So in France, something like 95% of large corporations have something to do with startups.
Twice the percentage in the U.S.
Yes.
I was really surprised by that.
I was shocked by that. And they have some very, very interesting arrangements. For example, they have a bunch of global corporations that came together and created the Ecomobility Ventures, which is an investment fund, which is jointly run by Air Liquide, Michelin, Orange, SNCF, which is a railways, and Total. So companies from completely different industries, large corporations, came together and started this engagement with the startups. I've never seen anything like this, frankly, in any other country.
You know, in the last week, there's been some entertaining but a little bit disturbing news about efforts to open up creative processes that resulted in some horrible results. You probably heard about the Microsoft Tay, the artificial intelligence that they opened up to the community, which promptly taught it some horrible things. Or now I'm trying to remember, is it Norway, the UK, that they had a contest to name a Polar Explorer boat in the UK. And they opened that up, and the winner was Bodie McBoatface. So, but sometimes we learn more from failures. I'm sure Microsoft learned a great deal about what not to do from that experience with their AI and real life learning of AI and what can go wrong. What failures have you seen, and what can we learn from those failures?
What's kind of a bit of a caveat of our study, what we've done, we went through all the official reports by those companies looking for any mention of any engagement with startups. Of course, you don't read that much about failures in there, right? And I think in terms of failures, we certainly see a lot on acquisition side when you acquire a company, acquire a startup, and basically you kill it as a large corporation. You kill it. So we discussed it already. I think this is probably one of the most symptomatic things that can happen, where you only think about acquiring a technology, acquiring a product, and rolling it into your company, right? Instead of maybe learning from a startup and taking steps like Yahoo invested in Alibaba. You know, they didn't try to kind of acquire Alibaba, or that would probably not do any good. But if you look at the profitability of Yahoo, a lot of it is driven by this, you know, acquisition of a stake in Alibaba, and Alibaba is doing well, Yahoo not so much. But, you know, if it wasn't for that acquisition, they would have been doing much worse.
Yeah, so what's a failure that we can really take something away from?
Huh. That's a tough one. What's a failure where we can take something away from?
I mean, I guess there's so many categories of failures, of buying that company and not learning anything from it, sending money to, you know, invest in a company, but not really getting anything from out of that investment.
So there are many instances of that happening. That, I think, is you know, always all over the news, you see this kind of accusations going wrong. Other than that, I think, you know, except for wasted money, there is really not that much danger in working with startups, right? So if you look at all those things that we describe in the report, you know, doing all these joint events and hackathons and incubators, like what can go wrong for a large company? It's mostly can go wrong for a startup, I guess.
Yeah. We're talking with Sergey Netessin. He's professor of global technology and innovation at INSEAD and co-author of the recent report, How Do the World's Biggest Companies Deal with a Startup Revolution? And if you're trying to engage with a startup, or you're in a startup trying to engage with a big company, give us a call at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. Let's talk about it from the other side. You know, I think that it's not only big companies that are guilty of some of these mistakes, that, you know, the startups are thinking this big company is going to be slow. They're going to be bureaucratic. They're not as in touch with the market as we are. We just want their money, and, you know, and then they can go away and let us do what we're good at. What should startups do to coach the larger companies so that they get the most from the relationship?
So first of all, I would say if you are just looking for money and you are willing to take this kind of a dump money where, you know, you get nothing other than money from an investor, that's never a good idea. Okay. So, that's never a good idea. You want someone who really understands your business. You want someone who appreciates kind of the speed at which you have to move, you know, and so on and so forth. So, typically, what you want out of this relationship, you want, of course, leads. You want leads for clients. You want leads for maybe suppliers. You want to be able to effectively expand your customer base. And for a large corporation, trying out a new service or product can be a relatively trivial thing. You know, they can carve out a little piece of their customer base, which would, you know, receive whatever that new product or service might be. So I think what you want is you want to be talking with someone who understands a little bit about startups and innovation, right? Which is typically, if you go to a large corporation, it's going to be someone who is in an innovation unit, right? So it's going to be very difficult for a startup to talk to just a line manager, right? Because line managers think in terms of KPIs and, you know, very predictable way of doing business. They are looking for promises for return on investment and those kinds of things. They don't really understand how startup world operates, how difficult it is to predict whether it's going to be a success or failure. And the fact that startups are constantly looking for a business model, they don't really know if the business model works or not. Right? So my first advice would be to find someone within a corporation who is somewhat understandable of startups.
Yeah, and it sounds like a startup could actually coach a company. So if a company comes to a startup and says, here's some money, we want to invest in you, you know, in a way, the money is the least valuable thing the company can give them. I mean, having a customer, you know, somebody who's tried the technology, applied it, made it work, and is willing to act as a reference is, you know, for an early stage startup, is of much bigger value than a mere $1 million investment.
Absolutely, absolutely. And another thing is, if you try to convince a corporation which doesn't really have a history of investing in startups to invest into you, you know, I can tell you it will take you forever to go through legal paperwork and explain to the lawyers how it works and so on. You know, that's not the pain you want to go into. Yeah, so I completely agree. What you're looking for is a partner much more than a source of investment.
There are some companies, later in the report, you talk about some examples, Microsoft and Orange and DBS, that really have a very full range of different things that they do with startups that help the startups, but also help the companies. Who is an example of a company that is using a large range of different ways of engaging with startups and getting a lot of value because of that?
So in the United States, the case study that we describe in the report is Microsoft. And Microsoft has done probably every imaginable thing with startups. They have all kinds of innovation centers and BizSpark, which is a startup program run by Microsoft. They have customer access programs for startups, allowing startups to access Microsoft's customers. They run venture accelerators. They have venture alumni program to support kind of startups that graduated from venture accelerator. They engage via sponsorship a lot. They have wonderful packages for startups, which allow them to use software for essentially free, use Amazon Cloud, Azure, and, you know, all of those kinds of services. And that I find very, very, very impressive. They basically have entire ecosystem with thousands of startups kind of, you know, around Microsoft trying to build their businesses using Microsoft network and resources.
And what are some of the ways they've seen value from that fairly significant investment?
I think if you look at all these programs, even the oldest ones, they are all relatively new. At Microsoft, the first trace that we found is that they started in 2005 to engage with startups through startup programs. And then most of the activities are only in the last 3 to 5 years, right? So I think I get this question very often. Okay, what is the return on investment there? And I think my answer is, we certainly see qualitative data, but it just hasn't been enough time to calculate this very precisely and to say, hey, here is exactly what you get, right? Because as you can imagine, You take an average venture capital fund. They have a life of fund 7 to 10 years, which is how long it takes to build a successful company, at least, right?
In your report, you talk, Sergey, about the different levels of risk and different levels of investment and so forth of these different mechanisms for engaging with startups. And you know, one of the things that occurred as I was reading this is how, you know, we often just jump to the most expensive option, which is buying the startup. But some of these other things, you know, having co-working spaces, providing advice, engaging at the level of, you know, first customer, and so forth is an easy way to decide whether you actually want to take that bigger step. You know, it's kind of testing to make sure. Let me invite our listeners to participate in this too. Let me give you a couple of different situations and see, we'll play kind of the speed round. If you were faced with, say you were the NFL and you, let's pretend that you cared about your players and wanted to design a helmet that would detect concussions, how could we engage with startups to invent a better helmet?
So if we are very kind of risk averse and don't really want to spend a lot of money, what I would advocate is start with an event like a hackathon and say, hey, I invite any startup to participate in a 48-hour hackathon where startups come and propose solutions to invent a better helmet. And they have 48 hours to kind of refine their business model using input from NFL experts who explain the problem and, you know, all kinds of constraints.
Okay.
And so on.
If I'm a large insurance company and I want to use drones as a way of assessing damage after a tornado or hurricane or something like that, lots of drone companies out there, startups, how could I find the best partner or find the best technology?
In this case, what I would think about is that in general, this is a pretty well-defined problem. I know that I'm looking for a drone company solution, and I know approximately what kind of problem I need to solve. What I would try to do, I would try to maybe create an incubator or co-working space, and I would invite all kind of drone-based startups to apply, and I would select based on which startups are more likely to be able to solve my problem. And once I get a dozen or so of those startups co-working, then I keep a close eye on them and see how they are progressing, and then I decide as time goes on to maybe invest into some of them.
Sergey, I hate to say it, we're just about out of time. Just in 30 seconds, if you were talking to a skeptical CEO from a large company and they said, I just don't see the value, you know, maybe we'll acquire a startup, maybe not, what would you say to persuade them to try some alternative ways of engaging with startups?
I would say that the only option that we do not outline in our report is doing nothing. Because if you're doing nothing, you will not know what will kill you. You will not know what new wave of innovation is going to come and make your business model completely obsolete. So I think we outline a lot of different ways of engaging with startups. Some of them are relatively trivial to implement and cost not that much money, which is why doing nothing is really not an option.
We've been talking with Sergey Netessin. He's the Timken Professor of Global Technology and Innovation at INSEAD. He's also co-author of the recent report, How Do the World's Biggest Companies Deal with the Startup Revolution? If you go to innonavi.com, innonavi.com, and look at InFeed, you can get a link to that report. Sergey, thanks very much for coming on Innovation Navigation.
Thank you for having me, David.